Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks its guests three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine. And this week, well, we're transatlantic for at least one of my guests. They make up 50% of one of the best bands you'll ever hope to see live. In 1999, they arguably stole Glastonbury, well, for me anyway, when they walked out on stage on a clear, bright, dry afternoon, just in time for the heavens to open on the opening bars of their festival anthem, Why Does It Always Rain on Me? It felt like serendipity to those of us watching. But as you'll hear in this episode, that wasn't the experience that played out for them on stage. Having had several lineup changes, the four men that went on to become known as Travis met in their native Scotland and spent years gigging and building a live following before making a serious dent on the charts 22 years ago with their second album, The Man Who, which spawned hits like Driftwood, Turn, and the aforementioned Why Does It Always Rain on Me? They've since sold millions of records and won countless awards, including Best Band and Best Album at the Brits, and have played the biggest stages the world has to offer. For years now, they've been working remotely, very successfully, even before working remotely became a thing, with at least three of them living in different countries at any given time. First of all, the lead singer, Fran Healy, who's in downtown Los Angeles, and then all the way in Liverpool, Andy Dunlop, who, for the interests of transparency, is a good and old friend of mine. They continue to record music and tour, and you can hear their latest album, 10 Songs, wherever you get your music, and you can see them live on their forthcoming UK tour, which starts, fingers crossed, at the end of April. So, let's dial them up. It's so nice to see you both. The last time I saw you, I was stood in a pit at the front of your stage, singing to the sky, and that feels like a lifetime ago.
Oh, don't concerts feel like a different life?
Don't they?
We've been given a tentative date, though. It's so exciting. June 21st.
And I don't know about you, Anne, but I couldn't quite react to it at first. I had to sit with it for a while and check not just the ITN news and the BBC news, but also Newsnight to make sure it was real and no one was going to change their mind. And then I could believe it.
My WhatsApp was on fire. It was just like the image just kept coming of like the sort of date with all the sort of provisos and everything. I was like, oh, my God.
We should explain that Fran's in Los Angeles and he's obviously slightly disconnected from...
This is all news to me because here is they're still... I mean, the down things like that, but they're still like... They're rubbish over here.
There's a festival happening this year. That has got to make you guys just click your heels together and clap your hands.
I'm still in disbelief. Will people actually want to go into a field together, do you think?
Oh, I think it's really
well, we
good.
Spent the last year in a park, so what's the difference?
Oh, yeah, I know. That's true. But I just wonder, just from a ticket buying, not in a field, yeah. I mean, like gigs, indoor gigs.
I think people are really wanting to get out.
So how have you boys been conducting your business as a band via the pandemic? Fran, you're in LA. Is Dougie still living abroad or is he back in the UK now? He's in Glasgow. And you're in Liverpool. Where's Neil?
Lancaster.
You've been doing this remote working since before anybody else had to think about it.
Well, you know, the weird thing, Kate, was we were rubbish at it before the pandemic, but we've suddenly become very good. I think it brought it into focus what you could do, because you had to do it. And actually, we're in ruder health than we've ever been. We see each other more than we ever did.
The only thing I would say is that it makes everything about four times harder. The lockdown's been... I don't know how you find it, Kate, but like for us, like if we were going to do this, for instance, or something similar, where, say, for instance, we played you a song, we would come to the studio and your guys would set up the thing and our guys would set up the stuff. We'd just come in, play, talk, then leave. But now we have to record something, send it to Andy, Neil and Dougie. They all play on it. I'm like to everyone, right, guys, play, like line it up. And then they all send it back and none of it's lined up. So then I have to line it all up every single time, Andy.
Yeah.
I have to line it up.
It's lined up, I just move it on purpose.
And then eventually you get it and you put it in that, and then it's mixed and then I have to send it back. Then we make a video and it's like, it is like, yeah. I hit the wall in October and... I'm over the wall now, but it's been tough. It has been tough for everyone.
Totally.
You know what? I didn't lose any family members, and I know people who have. So that's when you scale off with what is actually important, it doesn't really even factor into it. So
it doesn't. Yeah. Hopefully, people can come and see you live again very soon. Are there plans to get back out on the road now that we're open?
Yeah, I think so.
Can't wait for us to just play together again, even just in a rehearsal room, because you really miss that. We tried to do it about 2 weeks ago. There was like, these competition winners for the last album, and me and Fran tried to do like a live performance over like one of these things, and the time delay was just so insane. It's like Fran would play, and then I was behind him. Then the person would be singing along to it, like another second or two behind that, going, "Why does it always rain?" And it was like a Steve Reich record. It was like an experimental music. It's so hard. So just to play in a room together again is going to be great.
I wanted to start with one with you that sits around divine intervention, because when you read back the Travis story, so many things happened that were beyond any sort of manufacturing on your part. And I'm just going to give you some examples. On a visit to Scotland, Nico Bolas, who was kind of a long-time Neil Young and Rolling Stones associate, tuned into a Travis session on Radio Scotland, is that right?
Yeah.
And he heard something in you that made him then get on a train or a plane and travel to Perth, and that's Perth, Scotland, not Australia, I'd like to add. Mm-hmm. And Fran, you've said, he told us we were shit. He took us in the studio for 4 days and taught us how to play properly like a band. He was ballsy, rude in New York, really pushy. He didn't believe my lyrics and told me to write what I believed in. He was Mary Poppins. He sorted us out. So that's one example of divine intervention in your story. Yeah. And then there's Andy McDonald, right?
Or A&R guy.
We signed a record contract just to him. There was no record label. He just sold Godis. So it was just a personal check, was a record contract. So we signed to him and then he started a record label. So it was just him as a guy.
Now, as a vote of confidence, I mean, that was a significant investment. We're talking six figures, right? Of his own money. Mm-hmm. That mm-hmm. is somebody coming along at a time when you may or may not have felt like you had a giant in your corner backing you, but gave you that, like, I think you're bloody great. And then the other moment that always comes up if you Google Travis is the moment you walk on stage at Glastonbury. They've had this beautiful day of dry weather and then the opening bars of Why Does It Always Rain On Me starts and the rain starts to fall. It was poetic. It was divine intervention. Can you think of other moments?
There's been so many more things. The year, right, so I'll give you two examples. That was a really, the year that we kind of became huge was some strange things happened. I lived in a little flat not a flat, a little tiny house, little coach house on Weston Park in Crouch End. So I was, we're as you come down the street towards, there used to be a KFC on the corner, you know, the high street. We were in 22A Weston Park. And the first thing was that it was around about June or May or something, or maybe around about March, April, May, the posters for the Virgin Festival went up. And it was V99, and it was August 22nd of August in Weston Park, Weston Park. 22nd of August is 22A, which was my address. So my address was on this poster saying 22A Weston Park in Stafford. And I was born in Stafford.
No.
Yeah. So I'm going, what is going on? And we're on the bill. We were like, and it says our name on the thing. I'm like, oh my God, what's this a sign? What's going on here? What's going to happen? Am I going to, you know, is this the day I'm going to die or whatever? And I was really worried about it. That was the day that Travis got to number one, on the 22nd of August at Weston Park. Yeah, on a Sunday. And it was like, it was there. And then there was this other time when I was in that particular house. I'm sure there's something magic about that house. I was lying in bed one morning. We had a Velux window right above the bed. And I woke up, like, I heard this boom. And I woke up and it was like a white dove. Well, no, that's right. No, I didn't wake up. I was lying, looking up. And this white dove just out of nowhere just came and just whacked itself on the window. Like full wings out. And flew off and left a dust shadow of itself like an angel above my bed. And I was like, oh my God, that's the strangest thing. And that was just a little bit, it was in the same year. And then finally, the day before remember Andy, when we got the publishing deal in Stones Bar?
Yeah.
Stones Bar in Edinburgh. Right. This is a time before mobile phones. And we went to Edinburgh to play a gig, and that's where we got specifically to play for Sony Music Publishing, who were going to come up and say whether or not they were going to give us a deal. And so we'd gone through and we'd done this gig. The PA blew up within the first 20 seconds. And we could not play. Then a massive fight broke out in the place, as always happened. Then the riot police came in. And in this, it was like a bar fight in it. Yeah. And then we were just, and in the middle of us, we get a deal. I came home that night and my mum opened the door. She went, oh, dear God, thank God you're all right. And I was like, well, what's up? She's like, well, the funniest thing happened tonight. So at my bed, I slept in the kitchen next to the fridge. In an alcove in our house, and above my bed I had posters and whatnot, and one of the posters that, like, so my bed's like this, and then above the bed or the sides of the bed is a poster of Travis Bickle from Taxi Driver pointing his gun or doing that or something. And that's not where we got our band name from, by the way, but anyway, he was above my bed and she was doing something. She was like, I was just making something at the cooker. And I heard this noise and I turned around and that poster just had just come off your wall and it was just floating like this. And it just like just landed on the bed perfectly, like someone just laid it there. And she thought, oh my God, I hope nothing bad has happened. Our family were just constantly like, what bad is going to happen? It's not what good is going to happen. We're always thinking what the bad is.
Terrible. Hail Mary's all over the place.
Yeah. So and that was the night we got our deal. So lots of cool things. I mean, there's even more, but I mean, it's pretty cool. I think there's definitely a lot to be said for stars aligning. You see little signs, things happening, and we're no different.
It's funny. I always liken it to building a bonfire. Like, you, as a band, we worked really hard up to that point. You build the best bonfire you can ever make, and then you're like, you finished it, you're like, that looks brilliant, and you all pat your pockets, and nobody's got a light, nobody's got matches, nobody's got lighters. And you've built this, but you've got to wait around for like a little spark, just, and sort of a little spark will fly towards it, and suddenly, because it's so well made, it'll just be whoosh. But you need those little bits of like the luck or something coming along.
I mean, it was like you guys came together, and once you'd got that formation of the four of you right, you just worked really hard. But your success was informed by so many things that you could never have planned for or manipulated or made happen.
Yeah, totally. It's kind of in that it's totally all up to all these lovely wee little happy accidents that they really, it feels like magic. You feel like you're,
it does.
You feel like you're, we're all pretty lucky guys, and I think you pull your luck together when you have, you're individually lucky, and so you kind of make that luck bigger.
You're also really nice guys, and I do think that goes a long way, because, you know, at the time that this was all happening and imploding and exploding for you, there were some big characters on the scenes, and you were never arseholes. You've always been thoroughly nice guys.
Behind closed
stick
doors.
Stick around, Kate.
Yeah. It's funny.
Oh, I've known you too long to know that you're definitely not arseholes. Yeah. You're definitely
I was talking to Joe's mum's fella today about it, actually, because he was saying about the shows, and he said, you always work really hard when you play live. And I thought, we were kind of lucky because we played for a long time before we made it. We did, and we played to a lot of, like, sort of two guys and a dog shows, and like people that didn't want to see you, and people were throwing stuff at us or weren't fight. And once we made it, if it ever got tough, it was kind of, you knew what to do. You had the sort of the toolkit ready to go, okay, I know how to work this. I've seen so many bands that had it, that were in the first record, the first single, they got massive. And as soon as anything got difficult, they would turn their backs on the audience. They would give up. They would get really petulant. And that's totally the wrong way to do it. You fight for whatever you want, for what you want. And we were so used to fighting by that point that I think it was already embedded into us.
Yeah. Totally.
I think, because I mean, I know that in the first instance, you were a band that gigged and gigged and gigged and gigged, and it just felt like those moments of making it happen slipped through your fingers a few times. But actually, when you look back, hindsight would inform that actually that was kind of meant to be.
Yeah, there's very few bands we didn't support at the time, I don't think.
So many bands. We played something. I saw a list of gigs. We're reissuing Good Feeling, our first album, on vinyl. I think it's April the 2nd, so we've been looking at a lot of stuff to do with that record. One of the things was, why don't we do a funny T-shirt with all the gigs that we played over that album? There's like 247 shows on that record, and which is kind of unheard of. You don't get bands that play like that. And we spoke to Steve Lillywhite, our first producer, the other day, and we were talking about how he's like, because you are a band, that's the thing that you guys are. And we were like, yeah, I know. And he's going, no, but that's really special. That bond that you have together, you're still the same band as you were 27 years ago, 30 years ago, whatever. And you can't break that. He talked about when he first went to London, Steve first went to London, and he'd meet people, and a guy would be like, oh, I'm in four bands. And he's like, four bands? That's rubbish. He's got to be in one band. He's like, that's like having four wives.
It kind of is, though, isn't it? Do you know what I love that Steve Lillywhite also told you that an intro to a song was your front door as to the record. And I thought that was such a brilliant way of framing the importance of a beautiful intro. An intro that really holds you and invites you in. And to look at it like that, I'd never in all my years of listening to music thought of it in that way. And then it made total sense. You're like, no brainer.
I think out of everyone we ever worked with, nobody loved music more than Steve. He was just so passionate about music,
He made Fairy Tale of New York. I mean, you can't beat that. I mean, he's done a lot of stuff, but that's like one of those songs that are like pure magic. They're and he was in charge of putting that in the bottle, keep bottling it, and he's amazing.
He's also the guy that brought the Joshua Tree that's formed in the end. I think that was Steve, wasn't it?
Which is one
of my favourite albums still ever. I mean, the thing is, I'll fall in and out of love of U2. And I was talking to someone about this the other day, and there can be a U2 concert, and I'm like, what's Bono doing? But as soon as they play "But the Streets Have No Name," it's just like that. You just can't help yourself. It's just
God-like.
It's one of the best songs ever. And when they play that live, it's just, they are unbeatable. It's amazing.
Because every component on that record works, be it the guitars, the drums, the vocals, the arrangement, the production, everything is just there. And it sits on the nape of your neck and you wear that song, don't you? When it comes on, you're like, that's a moment. What's it like when you are a bunch of young pretenders and Steve Lillywhite says, you're good? What does that feel like?
Oh, it's great. That whole, we had a lovely conversation the other day with Steve, and all of us, we all met and did one of these with Steve. And it was, all the memories kind of thawed and came back to me anyway. I could not get to sleep. Because I was so excited after the call. It's cool. You know, we were sort of, we just went from signing on the Dole to being in one of the best studios in the world, like within months, and with Steve Lillywhite, one of the best producers in the world, recording our first album. And you'll never get that opportunity again, like that first experience of being a professional musician. But and what a first time it was. It was so many great memories.
It was great because we were talking to Steve about it the other day, and we're so thankful to him, not just for making a record, but where he took us. Because I think he purposefully did that to a young band. You know, we're massive fans of the band who all made loads of music there, you know, in Dillon and in Bearsville, upstate New York. And the whole experience itself, as well as making the music, was just dreamlike. I remember, like, me and Neil got off the plane, and the guy that picked us up, he was like this sort of ex-cop, this ex-New York cop, and he opened the glove compartment to show me and Neil the biggest gun I have still seen in my life. It was like a pistol, but it was about that size, you know, it was actually like no hand could pick it up, you know.
Welcome to America!
Yeah, it's just surreal. And from that point on, that whole journey of Bearsville was just the weirdest, most amazing, most magical. like everything was like nothing you'd ever seen in your life before.
It's mad, isn't it? You know, can you remember when we all first started out and then you'd ring home? And your mum or your dad would go, so what you been doing? And then you'd have to try to explain this kind of other world that we were occupying at that time.
Even just the weird little things. I remember like sort of getting into the first house we stayed in and getting all the American cereals. And we were just like, this thing, all these like, weird sugary sort of, like, sort of thing. It's just basically solid sugar in a bowl. But it's just like,
it's American sugar.
I remember our first Brits, we got taken to Brits before we were ever involved in it, and it was just like, free booze! It's like, free drink! and it was totally just like the abuse of that, so like, and it ended up sort of like unconscious somewhere, you know?
That was a horrific night.
It was like the next day's like, where's Andy? Where's Neil? Where's
was that not the night you forgot your name?
No, that was a Burns night.
No,
it wasn't my name.
I just moved.
No, I just moved to Archway. I'd moved to that flat in Archway, and everyone's going, Andy, where's your flat? And I was just like,
I don't know.
Yeah, I couldn't remember where I'd moved to. So like, everyone was trying to get me home.
I thought it was your name. Yeah.
No, one of the loveliest drunks, though, and even when you're in a sense of complete stupor, you're still lovely. There's no bad vibe with you.
I think the big word would be ineffectual.
There is that, yeah.
Nothing gets done when I'm drunk.
And you used the word dreamlike to describe a moment back there with Steve in that session in the studio with him. But I wondered if we could just revisit that Glastonbury moment, because it is something that whenever you Google Travis is there, where you walk on stage and it has, you know, the day's been as dry as it's been long. And then suddenly you guys arrive and you start the opening bars of Why Does It Always Rain on Me? And the heavens open. Now, that's poetic, isn't it?
You would think so, but it was weirdly one of those things that just passed me by anyway. People looked a bit miserable that it was raining, you know, everything. It wasn't really one of those things that you felt, oh, this is history. Like most points, like, sort of like where things sort of pivot, you don't really notice it at the time. It's only after it that you sort of start thinking, oh, right, okay, that was kind of a big deal, really, you know?
Do you remember, Andy, us coming off stage and like, everyone's like, almost like the kind of commiseration, like patting us on the back, like it was the... And it was, it didn't feel like we'd done a good show.
We felt like we'd done an
average show, and it was a big chance for us, and we sort of blew it. And it was like, better luck next time, lads. We all got on we just left Glastonbury. We were like, oh well,
I did
that, and Oh, right, I know you didn't.
You rascal. No, it was weird because it was that time when we were starting to get looked after everywhere, and the bus was going, and I went, do you know what, I'm just going to stay at Glastonbury. And it was before mobile phones, and I don't think I turned up until the Wednesday. So I think everyone was going mental. What's happened to Andy?
Yeah. That's how you do Glastonbury.
Yeah.
So really, that gig, that when I look at it now as somebody that's watching it on YouTube, it feels poetic. It does. It feels like it was meant to be. And yet you left that stage feeling like you'd underperformed.
But here's the thing. Like, when I got back that night, I went back to the house, turned on the telly. And you know, like in the old days when your telly would warm up, take a second to warm up.
Yeah.
I switched the telly on and I could hear the telly crackling up and coming on. And as I turned my back and went back to sit in the sofa, I heard my name get called out of the TV. Like my name, like Fran Healy, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, what? I thought I was hearing something. And I turned around and the telly came on. It was Joe Wiley and John Peel sitting around the fire, or Mark Radcliffe. Maybe it was John Peel. And they were talking about us and talking about how we were the band of the weekend. We totally smashed it. And I'm like, what? That's just not what happened. And so they went, and let's have a little look. And they showed us playing. And it was amazing.
It was amazing.
It was, I was like, holy crap. That's us. We're really, when you're in the moment, you're dealing with, I can't hear myself, I'm out of tune, oh no, it just started raining and everyone's really upset at me. Why? Why would they be upset at me for it raining? But, you know, that's the way it works, you know, it rains, the person's there, it's their fault, right?
Yeah.
And it was absolute polar opposite of it, so you never really know where you stand, really.
All those people in the field that we made it rain on are the ones that didn't buy the record.
I don't know, I think after that, yeah, there weren't many people in this country that hadn't bought the record. It did remarkably well, and still to this day, it's one of those songs, you know, it's one of those songs.
We had it not yesterday, but the day before, me and Dylan, we were watching that, you know, that Only Connect, you know, the quiz show on BBC. It's like a really sort of cerebral quiz show. And it was on, Why Was It Always Rain, was one of the sort of music sort of link rounds. And we're like, oh, wow. You know, so, and then me and Dylan went to Tesco to get like the sort of shopping in. And it was on in the big Tesco just around the corner from us. It was one of those days where Why Does It Always Rain kept appearing that day. It was just like, oh, my God.
Andy, I love you for calling it the big Tesco's.
I know, yeah.
I still do that.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I always think of you guys as as being quite cinematic. When I come to see your shows, even just the production sounds soundtrack-like. So I wanted you to put kind of a filmmaker's hat on if you could. And if you had to make a film about your life and times as a band, what moments would you feature in the trailer that would best land your story? The seminal moments.
Fran's already done it. He's made a film about the band.
Oh, right. I would say in the trailer for this, the film about our lives, I would say it's like it starts off with a like me sitting in my bedroom next to the fridge.
Can we just talk about why your bedroom was the kitchen?
Well, because it was just a one bedroom house, and there was that was the only space that I had for me to sleep, and it was beside the fridge that was really loud fridge, but it was fine. You know, you it was like that was normal, and so I would have that. Oh, here comes a fire truck. They're so loud here. So they've got their woo woo woo, and they've also got their. Listen.
Yeah.
Hold on. Right. So I would put me in the bed. I would put the big giant fight that broke out as getting a deal. I would have Andy
That's a good scene.
I would have Andy McDonald coming up to me in the pub and saying, "Hey, I want to give you a deal," like out of the blue, the day before my 23rd birthday. I would play a sort of montage of all of the toilets we played up and down the country in that year leading up to Glastonbury. And then I'd play the Glastonbury thing and then cut to us. I would take Why Is It Always Raining Me where it starts raining and then just cut to the following year when we headline Glastonbury on a Saturday night. We headline Glastonbury on a Saturday night. That's amazing. It's like... So
that's
cool.
It, isn't it? Does is that, you know, in terms of like a musical Everest, is that the peak?
Aye, I would say so.
I remember standing before it on the sort of platform at the top of the stage, and the Pet Shop Boys were on before us, and they had a major production. It was all these people with these cones on their heads. It was about 30 people on stage, all dancing around everywhere, and it was amazing. It was like musical theatre, and we were standing in like jeans and t-shirts, about to go on stage and everything like. And I was absolutely terrified. I was like, "How do we follow?" But it was amazing because I think the simplicity of it just really sort of struck home.
That's always been the case with your shows, though. I love that. I think the last but one time I saw you was on the South Bank. What theatre was that? And
was that the Man Who Show?
The Man Who Show, yeah.
Royal and Festival. So came, Hall,
yeah. And then I think the time after that was when I came and saw you perform the whole album in its entirety on Blackheath or Greenwich.
Oh, yeah, that was great, that festival, really nice.
Yeah, that was great. But I love that moment, when you talk about the simplicity, there's a moment where all four of you come to the mic and it's just the four of you and what's the song that you do at that
Flowers
moment?
Flowers in the Window.
That's beautiful. There is no more simple or beautiful or poignant a moment than that. It's lovely.
Yeah, it's nice. We're very lucky that we've got a handful of really well-known songs and
anthems, Fran. Anthems.
Yeah, yeah, and they've soundtracked people's, you know, lives and deaths and births and all kinds of things, and it's like. You couldn't hope for anything better than that when you're a recording artist.
Well, you stitch yourself into people's lives, don't you? And that's, you become embedded, and then the next generation discovers you. I've took my son to both of those gigs, and he knows Andy a little through our friendship.
Yeah.
And he's like, and he loves Dylan because Dylan's older than him and really grown up and tall. And he's, you know, he's got big shoulders.
Yeah.
And then he was like, I remember when we came to the Royal Festival Hall gig, he went, "Mom, look at Dylan's dad. He's a nutter." And he couldn't understand how this very placid, calm, lovely, super chatty guy that is you when we're hanging out was this kind of guy that was leaping off of speakers and... crowd surfing, and you are a bit of a nutter, Ant.
I think that comes back from the early days where like a moving target was harder to hit, to be honest.
People throwing bottles.
I never understood it all. You know those cool bands, how they could just stand there and be cool, because it's so much fun being on stage, and it's such a joyous explosion of energy. That's just the way I sort of interpret it, I suppose. But I could never understand how you could just stand there, not smile and play music, because it's great. It's like the best job in the world. Yeah. It's really joyous, and to just stand there. I really could not do it.
You look at the Pet Shop Boys, right? They don't move. They don't even need shoes because they're not really going very far.
Maybe if I had loads of dancers, I wouldn't do it.
So, and would there be any moments that you would add to the trailer of the film about the life of Travis?
I think that's a fairly good summary of the rise to that point. You know, the struggle to that point was like, okay, we've managed to get that, and then we just sort of enjoyed ourselves after that, you know. And it's been sort of, you know, your careers go around corners, ups and downs and things, and it's all been fun, it's all been great, it's all been a valid part of the journey since then as well, you know. And we're still together, it's still the same four guys, still enjoying making music, still making music that we enjoy making, you know. Like the last album was a joyous experience to make. It's, you know, to make something still and go and sit back and go, oh, I'm really proud of that, I'm really happy with the way that sounded, and to still be doing that after all this time, it's what more could you want?
You have to take a few risks. I remember the conversations with, you know, uncles and people going, oh, you know, you're going to get a proper job, or, and you sort of sacrifice that a bit because you're following this crazy unreal, you're, not many people get a record deal type of thing, and you just have to go for it. And so it's kind of risky, but when you do get a deal, and when you do get a little bit of success, it's like you do feel like, even Bono says it, he feels like he's still getting away with it.
Yeah.
That's Bono.
Every band, I think, is a perfect shitstorm of confidence and stupidity.
I love that. Yeah. A perfect shitstorm of confidence and stupidity. That's got to be on a poster somewhere, Ant. My final question to you is firmly entrenched in musical waters. I want to know from the pair of you, what's the one song that you wish you'd written? And also, which lyric do you consider to be the greatest of all time?
Well, I'll tell you what, it changes all the time, but I've become obsessed with the Paul Simon song, 50 Ways to Leave Your Lover. I think it's just...
Is that something you're trying to tell us, Ant?
No. Definitely. It's been a long lockdown. No, but it's just the sound of it. The rhymes in it, and it's like a little. It's like a kind of nursery rhyme. It's not really that important a song almost, but it's just become this thing that I listen to like a lot, and I've really sort of taken it apart and listened to it a lot recently. So for me at the moment, it's that song. But it changes. That's the thing. I don't have necessarily a song that's gone all through my life has been my favourite song. There's a patchwork of songs that I will always listen to.
So you talked about deconstructing that song there. Is that what you do as musicians? Do you deconstruct music and listen to other people's music?
I like to work out the chords and things. It's funny, you can't learn to write a song. You can't learn to write a great song, but you can work out what's great about a song that's already been written, I think. And with that, it's a journey. The way I always look at music is it's because people think of like in chords. I like to think it's a sort of the musical movement. You know, it goes from left to right, and then it moves down a little bit. And you know, I love when bass lines fall, and it feels like you're going down. And so it's that sort of thing that I like to sort of take apart and go, "Oh, that's amazing what you did there." And that song does it. It's so many times. It's beautiful.
What about a great lyric then, Ant?
This is another one I've listened to a lot. It's A Case of You by Joni Mitchell. It's just the most amazing lyric. It's so powerful and so poignant. It's just it's a song. Like, Fran turned me on to Joni when we first started. But I was like a total AC/DC kid, like. And then
I never
heard of it until I met Fran, and it was a whole new, because you know they're all singing about balls and getting laid or whatever, or hell. You know what I mean? It's like suddenly you can sing about your heart getting broken, and it was a whole new world to me. But that song especially is just so beautifully written, so wonderfully constructed.
What about you, Fran?
There's so many great lyrics, and there's the lyrics to Cool for Cats is a good one. I mean, that's just one, for instance. Like, he's, if you read those lyrics, the Indians send signals from the rocks above the pass. The cowboys take position in the bushes and the grass. The squaw is with the corporal. She's tied against the tree. She doesn't mind the language. It's the beating she don't need. She lets loose all the horses and the corporal is asleep. It's like they tell these stories.
Yeah, storytelling. That, that it's almost country, isn't it? And
that folk. They're completely... They read like stories, but they've got this amazing melody over the top of them. It's really hard to get the two things to sit. But the whole that whole song is just amazing. Like it's some really, really great lyrics on it. And what was the other question, Kate? Was it song?
The one song you wish you'd written.
Maybe something like Route 66 by Chuck Berry.
You've Get gone your way picks back.
On Route 66.
Yeah,
it's like it's an amazing song, and it's still people still sing it, and that's like 60 years after it was written.
God, yeah. I've changed my My Heart Will Go On, because I'd be totally minted if I'd written that. artistic integrity. I just want money.
Or I Will Always Love You, Dolly Parton.
Great song. That is a great song.
You're going for the big bucks.
I was doing a thing about key changes today, and I Want to Dance with Somebody is the best key change in the world ever. It's the most amazing. That lift at that point is that
goes up.
I want to dance with somebody. That is a great pop song. Brilliant.
And I believe I'm right in saying she never wanted to release that. It didn't feel like her kind of music to her. Thank you both so much. Fran, look after yourself in Los Angeles. And
we'll see you soon, I hope. June 21st, we'll just have one big party as soon as this is all over.
My God, no yours. I don't care.
Oh, great to see you, Kate.
Thank you so much.
Look after yourselves. Bye, boys. That's it for this week's White Wine Question Time. As always, the show's produced by me, Kate Thornton, with Richard Hatherall for Yahoo UK. Editing and co-producing is with Callum Goddard-Mucklow. Our music is provided, as always, by Andy Bell. We'll be back next week with more great chat. Until then, do as we do. And please, if you're drinking, drink responsibly.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.